Diegetic, a Breath of the Wild fanfic written by Horchata, read by Domayape, Redshift, and Hypocorism.
Summary. You promised Shimei, the kid from the woodland stable, that you'd show her a sky filled with balloons. With the ingenious use of octoballoons, you kept your promise to Shimei. As thanks, she gifts you with a star fragment. It's weird there's no music this time, she says.
It's weird that there's no music this time, she says. Link looks over at the girl, Shimei, who's still watching the barrel mosey float higher, seesawing its way above the tables. The man who'd been mumbling to himself about monsters looks up when the portly cylinder shadow crosses his plate of rice and meat and scrambles up wide-eyed out of the way. He hums a bit to ask her because he can't get his face to raise an eyebrow. She tilts her head to side to side. Usually there's music you play, and it's magic. There's still magic now, but it's all mean. Everything's a sword. The octoballoons pop all at once and crash to the table. A Hylian mushroom appears from the splinters to sit on the chair, its red-orange cap as large as the seat. She looks right at him. Last time you had a harp. Link picks up the mushroom and it disappears in his hand, just like the star fragment had. Shimei laughs in delight, one sharp, elevated note. That's new too, she says. He takes off running.
The meteor rod is badly damaged. It's hard to aim the spheres without getting so close you accidentally hit the bokoblins with the rod, which works, of course, but renders it cracked and fragile. It's a miracle he has it to begin with. Bad enough he keeps misusing it. All the grass has long finished burning, so there's no air to glide up in and pull out his bow to change the way the world works. To fall slow and easy for the extra seconds he needs in this fight. And he needs it. This bokoblin has black skin, the first Link's ever seen, and it's angry and still not dead. Link swishes too close to the bokoblin and the rod shatters. The glass noise rockets his heart rate up. The bokoblin swings its huge sword and fells an entire tree. It roars. Link's done for. He's done for. Something sparkles on the ground. Link picks up the tree branch and throws it desperately at the bokoblin's face. He barely aims. It hits. The bokoblin drops with a cry, ragdoll body fading out all at once into matte black hole, then smoke. Link looks at the pulsing purple guts. A tree branch. Everything's a sword.
Link thinks about the things he can hear. Any pot he throws will clatter its clay pieces. His horses neigh and whinny their protests and cries. People speak to him and laugh sometimes and call out and clap. Impa's hat has knives that chime. When he runs, the things he wears knock together with his footsteps. And his footsteps make their own rhythms over grass and dirt and stone. Animals groan as they die. Sometimes monsters scream. When he gets too close, the herons squawk their displeasure and take to the skies. The herons. That's right. The birds. There are birds. The pigeons sing. The little birds chirp and flutter and hop, peep walking before they scatter. He doesn't even know their names because he's never gotten close enough. But that's a little like music, too. Shimei's not quite right. The birds make music.
The light sets him down gently at the shrine. The pulse in Link's ear is slow and dangerous. It's almost an alarm. He can't believe he's standing up. It was reckless, trying to go through the Zora Kingdom with next to nothing, with so little strength. The ground was all mud and flattened grass, pink neon sea fan plants, and too few mushrooms next to the trees, or at least not enough he saw this time. Too many Octoroks in the water. He lost the path and found the path and lost it again, ending up in this cave of electric geese with wet metal weapons, a bow that broke, and nothing to eat. He panicked. The stable's right there, below the shrine, merchants milling about, and an apple tree nearby. It's warm here and clear. The moon curves in its gentle crescent, and someone's left the fire lit under the pot, even though it seems like the travelers are sleeping their dinners off. Link doesn't wait for a warm meal. He climbs the tree and scarfs down two apples in a row, picking up a staminella shroom on the way and feeling instantly better. Beetle is there. Link can't be surprised. Beetle is everywhere. Beetle takes Lisfalo's tails in trade for rupees, and rupees in trade for rice, and Link cooks himself something warm in the pot outside. Seeing the rice dance in the water makes something in him change and bloom. He soaks up the fire like rice soaks up the water. The earthy, round smell of the staminella shroom, the prospect of energy and calories, and the salt he added makes his mouth water. He hums. Shimei is sleeping back at her own stable, but he wonders what she'd think. Did it count as music if the instrument was his voice? He doesn't use it for much else. Maybe it's enough.
There are probably easier ways to get back to Lunairi's doorstep, but Link likes the Kakariko Hills. They look sculpted, like some ancient giant wanted a place that fit perfectly under their palm. Link has enough meals now to finish climbing one of the impossibly smooth, round mountains. He cooked a little with cocoa after trading teeth for rupees for arrows from Rola. And gliding down over the wetlands sounds easier than what he did last time, which was a lot of sneaking, wading, swimming, and running to avoid every monster along the way. Only to be completely incapable of avoiding every monster alongside On's route, but whatever. Plus, Link likes the view. He loves a good vista. He gets to the top by waiting out the rain, once again feeling odd that it was easier to hang for an hour from the hillside than to try to move for 5 seconds, and is rewarded with more of the gossamer glowing bells of blue nightshades. A Korok laughs in delight to be found. And below, and far out, there she is. Hyrule. Every time he gets a chance to look around, something aches in him. Shouldn't he remember this? Do other people feel this way when they get to look out at everything? Isn't this feeling the thing that people feel when they say they were moved? Pikango paints in search of beauty, but that low to the ground, surrounded by things people built, what beauty does he see? Nothing like this. Nothing like the way the moonlight glitters over the water, the gentle slopes of the field, the mountains. Even the lick of dark flames against the castle walls makes his throat catch. If only there was a cooking pot up here, next to the Korok. If only he could let this free and hum.
There's a fork in the road past the wooden monster obstacle course. One way that leads back to the Zora's domain, the long, wet crawl through where Prince Sidon had winked and grinned him through two bridges, and one that leads up to somewhere dry. Link goes up. Before, he thought a name like the Maw of Death Mountain was something to avoid, but until he can get stronger and figure out better how not to get shocked, he'd rather be in a maw. You can always jump out of a mouth. A doe materializes out of the mist and headbutts him. He'll feel that one tomorrow. But just as the first ones run off, a second doe appears from nothing, and this one he soothes into letting him ride. She lopes along in the dirt, past the trees and a broken-down wagon, and in the distance, through the rain, Link can see it, Death Mountain. Rivulets of lava pour down its sides. He stares. It's good his doe is more attuned to the world, because the road isn't peaceful. She almost throws him off at the drip-drop skips of an ice whiz robe over some more ruined trees, but she settles and he hurries her away. In his mind, he collects that sound too, the plink of each tiptoe in the air. They meet Boldon, who says he's an ambassador of tourism, and doesn't comment on Link's doe or his mismatched clothing, or that he is running away from saving a drowning kingdom.
Bolden tells him the castle is full of monsters and treasure hunters, and Link recognizes he's supposed to feel something about that, though he can't really get his face to change. He isn't going there anytime soon. There are warm darners who buzz in the long grass, two stags looking up and out to the east, woodland boars who snort their challenge and run alongside Link's doe in a race she isn't trying to win. And new things, creatures Link's never seen. Huge birds who don't fly and who shriek somewhere in their long throats, toddling outrage at getting interrupted and dancing their feet like they're trying to get momentum to run in silly wobbles away. Link thinks they'd probably be good meat if he caught one. But instead, there are bokoblins. There are always bokoblins, menacing two sisters. This time, Link has arrows and weapons, and most importantly, a shield, and jumps off the doe to take both monsters on and collect his spoils and a thank you meal. Nat says they were looking for hardy truffles in the trees and acknowledges the risk, but the taste of them makes the warnings melt away. Link keeps his mouth shut. There's another ice wizrobe play haunting some ruins, so Link runs towards the tall torches, their crackle and pop, the swish of the broom the stable steward sweeps, and then stops up short. Out in the front under the shadow of the big fabric horse, a bird. No, not just a bird. No, a Rito. They're blue. A beautiful blue, adorned with color around their waist and head and shoulders, eyes gentle and clear in blissful concentration. They're holding something in their fingers. It goes out and in, and their body rocks gently with the motion of pulling and pushing. Link's not close enough to know what it is, but the way they rock back and forth reminds Link of himself, of something he does. It reminds him of cooking. It reminds him of music. He rushes forward. The end.
Is it Liz Alphos or Liz Alphos?
I think it's cuter if we leave it as it is.
Okay.
Sorry.
I genuinely don't know. It's only because I'm reading along with you, Jay.
No, it's like, totally Liz Alphos. I just always say, it wrong.
Okay, no problem at all.